Hey guys, listen up. If your idea of skincare is rinsing your face with whatever's left from your shampoo, it really is time to upgrade. I want to tell you about the new men's line from Arrow Acres. It's made for guys who want real results without all the extra ingredients. Their products are clean, simple, and incredibly effective. From tallow balm that actually heals dry skin to hand-poured soaps that leave you smelling fresh and not floral. If you need a bug spray that works and doesn't leave you smelling like chemicals as well, they've got that. They've got lip balm and scrubs that are simple, no nonsense, and they're made with real ingredients that your skin actually wants. So if you're chopping wood, hitting the gym, or if you just want to stop stealing your wife's moisturizer and not telling anybody about it, well then they have your back. You can check out their full men's line by following the link in the show notes or on Instagram at Arrow Acres Homestead. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. Hello and welcome back to the show. I'm here with my co-host, Andy. I hope you guys enjoyed our inaugural episode last week with he and I talking together. Andy, it's good to have you back, man.
Glad to be back.
Yep. Beard is looking mighty fine today.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we have a guest here as well. Ransom, you doing good?
Yeah, I am.
Anything new with you?
No, not really.
No? About football season? It's been going good?
Yeah. It's been really fun.
Yeah? Been playing quarterback?
Yeah.
That's been your favorite position, right?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Well, Ransom's going to sit in and listen. He's going to be our live studio audience today. We're going to be talking about clothing, modesty, appropriate apparel that fits the occasion. And I think we can avoid calling you to go out and spend $15,000 on a new wardrobe, hopefully.
Yeah. No Brooks Brothers suits?
No.
Today.
No. But also more than rags.
As
we'll talk about that as well.
Strike a happy medium.
Yeah, there we go. Let's go ahead and pray and ask the Lord's help, and then we'll get into our content for the day. Father, we just thank you for this time. I thank you for the opportunity to have conversations about your word and how it's applied. Help us to take some biblical principles and apply them in ways that are faithful. And as we kind of get an overview from your word about how we are to dress appropriately, help us to do that effectively in this world, that we don't draw too much attention to ourselves in a negative manner or in a way that would be extravagant, flamboyant, or immodest on the other side. And so help us to do that and know when we're going into any occasion how to present ourselves in a way that honors you. And Lord, lead this conversation. I trust you will. And we just thank you for your word. Give us direction on everything. And we thank you for that. Lead us now. I trust you will. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
So this goes back, I think, for me to Art of Manliness. Brett McKay always had some practical advice on what to wear, how to wear it, how to tie a tie. I think the first video I watched about how to tie a tie was from Brett McKay. And then he had the... Right, so I'm going to shut that door so the audio is a little bit better. Then he had how to tie a bow tie. There was a bow tie craze a little bit. You had bow ties for a minute.
Yeah, I'm ashamed to say I was drawn into the bow tie craze. I have recovered since.
Okay, good. I'm glad. That was a craze, though, for a minute. I don't know why the bow tie thing happened, but
yeah,
it did.
I think, well, there was a big attraction to the aesthetic of Victorian era and then early, 1900s America, back when we used to have some gender distinctions in how we dressed, and we dressed generally nicer than we do today. So the bow ties sort of harkened back to that era. But one, my beard was so big, you couldn't see my bow tie anyway. So what was the point of wearing one? And two, a tie helps hide my belly a little bit better.
So. Oh, there you go. I think it James White and who was it? Al Mohler.
Yeah.
I think that were always
the Bow Tie Brigade, I think they were called.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
So we're out of that. I don't think anybody, I think, was it, let's see, Virgil Walker, I think, still wears a bow tie.
He can rock it, yeah.
He can rock a bow tie. Other than that, I don't know anybody that's still doing that. That was like a 10 years ago thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the pieces of differing colors of of wood. You know, you get the 1x6s and you paint it different colors and you do the backdrop. We did that at Christian Covenant. That was like a fad for a while. It's like fads for everything. So there's fads for bow ties. Glad we're out of that. Now we're talking about the Victorian. I guess that wasn't Victorian, but when was the English wigs? Was that that was 1700s.
1700s.
Yeah, we were talking about in researching this big wig, where the term big wig came from, and it came from that. If you're a big wig.
But you could afford more hair if you were wealthy, so you got a bigger wig.
So you're a big wig. Well, we're going to lay down some principles from God's Word. We have a little outline we're going to work through and highlight and hopefully be a help to you as you're thinking through how to dress appropriately when it comes to whatever occasion. We were preaching through Exodus, and I was recognizing that God called God called Aaron and the Levites to a particular dress, which was just a baseline of cleanliness. They were to clean their garments, wash their garments, to prepare to go up to the mountain. And just extrapolated a small sub-point about the way we present ourselves. And God does care about clothing. In the Old Testament, the priests were instructed on what they should wear. And there's distinctions based on gender in every society and culture around the world that are seen everywhere. God recognizes that, telling men to dress like men, women to dress like women. And then there's cultural application to that universal command and principle. Mm-hmm. But John the Baptist, he wore clothes fitting to the occasion. He lived in the wilderness, so he didn't wear, you know, he wasn't a city slicker kind of guy. And it was observable to those who would see him. He was a wild man wearing not soft clothes, but I guess you could say hard clothes. He was wearing clothes for the
camel hair shirt.
Yeah, camel hair shirt kind of thing. So let's work through some principles on clothing. This has been somewhat popular, you know, topic to discuss on various podcasts. I've seen a couple things here and there, but we're going to throw in some ideas in the conversation as well.
Sure. Well, we start with the idea of modesty. And so we want to be a people that dress to fit the occasion, and that the type of clothes that we wear are not about emphasizing our bodies in a sinful way is to promote lust, but to have our adornment be internal, to have the type of spirit and the type of inward realities to reflect outwardly, instead of being a person who is so wrapped up in how they look that they spend, you know, the first hour of their day styling their hair.
Right.
So and this goes both ways. You have the folks in the early church and the problems that Paul was writing about, the women having these extravagant hairstyles, and then you have fops in our day too, that are so concerned with the external dress that it's just gay.
Yeah. Well, I think you can communicate externally what's happening internally, and I think that often is very observable. So a chaotic person internally will also often present themselves chaotic externally. So from sloppy dressed or just not even being aware of how they're presenting themselves.
Sure.
But the vain person will reveal their vanity and how they dress externally, both male and female. I think the warning most often goes to females and how they dress, because there's tendencies with feminine sins and masculine sins that the feminine side often wants to present themselves in a way that's going to draw attention because they enjoy that attention, that right. being looked at, being gawked over. Men generally like to look, and the temptation is going to be to look. But the masculine side, while it might not be immodest, like not wearing enough clothes, there still is a way to present ourselves in an immodest or disrespectful manner.
Yeah.
In how we, you know, how we conduct ourselves.
And part of that is in excess. So when Jesus was critiquing the Pharisees, he said they like to make their phylacteries large and broad so everybody can see, you know, that's a holy fellow right there. He's got long tassels on his prayer shawl so that everybody knows, oh, that's a man of faith right there.
Mm-hmm.
They love to stop in the streets and pray, you know, oh, I was late to temple, so I need to stop right here and pray because it's the appointed time. So
yeah.
They like to blow the trumpet to show, you know, we're giving alms. You know, they might not have blown a literal trumpet, but they were very much broadcasting that they were giving alms, and all that stuff was immodest. It wasn't humble. It was prideful. And so the way that they dressed was drawing attention to themselves in an idolatrous way.
Yeah. when you start talking about immodesty or modesty, inevitably it goes to women, how much skin, mm-hmm. how length, what's the length of the skirt. You can get into modesty policing kind of thing. And yet, when the Bible commands modesty, it really does mean something.
Mm-hmm.
To some degree, I think there is some cultural applications to that of what is modest and immodest. I think if you run the cultural argument on some aspects of modesty, you get into saying, well, it's not considered immodest to run around in a string bikini. So you can run around in a string bikini because that's not immodest culturally. And I think that is wildly out of bounds scripturally.
Well, given the fact that a bikini covers roughly the same area as bra and panties.
Right.
So if you wouldn't be wearing a bra and panties running around, you shouldn't be wearing a bikini running around.
Right. The undressing of the American, the public undressing of America was a little pamphlet book that I read a few years ago. And actually, the thing that stuck with me the most is that it was in the 19-teens or 20s. There was a group of men walking around with their shirts off in New York City or some urban center in America, and they got arrested for public nudity, men.
Yeah.
And if you think about the difference between that and then where we are today, one of the reasons I wear a shirt in public, I mean, I'm not like a chiseled kind of, you know, Greek god or anything like that, is because that was personally convicting. I'm not throwing those convictions on every man that if you never wear a shirt, or if you go out and swim with a shirt off or something like that, you're necessarily being immodest. But as a personal application point for me, it's something I wanted to practice. It really was alarming to me.
Yeah.
And I think I would rather be cautious than liberal when it comes to what is modesty and what is immodest. And
sure.
Generally, if you think, is this a line that I'm crossing, females that are listening in, it's always, I think, better to say, if I'm getting close to a line, well, then I probably should, and people are going to draw that line in different places. You know, it used to be like a dollar bill at the knee, and if there's any skirt or shorts that are above the dollar bill, then you're officially labeled immodest. And mm-hmm. I don't want to get into the nitpicky thing like that, but in a lot of ways, modesty is a thing that is known, and immodesty is a thing that is known. And so if the female listening in, if you're showing off your breasts, if you're skirt is so high that your butt cheeks are sitting out, that those are obvious things that you want to avoid. And then for men, if you're wanting to draw attention to yourself in the clothing that you're wearing, when it comes to your own body, and you are jacked, and you're always running around in a cut-off t-shirt and wanting to show off your body in that way, well, then just be wise with that. I mean, that's immodest as well. It's not something we're saying, if you do that, you're going to immediately come under church discipline or something like that. But there is appropriate things that are just obvious that we should know. And sure, there should be a marked difference between how Christian women, Christian teenage girls, the way they dress, and non-Christian women, non-Christian teenage girls. And then also on the male side, there should be a difference in how we present ourselves. It should be at least observable.
Right. Because we know from the scriptures that uncovering of nakedness is not appropriate.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And so what did the scriptures consider uncovering of nakedness? Well, it tells us in the instructions of the garments the priests were to wear that their thighs were to be covered, you know. So don't be running around in Speedos, fellas. Yeah. That's immodest.
I know you have a like color-coordinated closet full of Speedos.
That's just for my wife's.
Okay, yeah, it's only for her eyes, man. Well, it is also in the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve are covering themselves. It seems that they are covering, you know, the private areas, so
right.
Breasts, you know, down low, that kind of stuff. But God still says that they are naked, even though they're covering some aspect of their body. They're still naked.
And He made for them coats of skins
to cover their body,
and something sort of akin to a loincloth to have a coat.
Right.
So, or a robe, or however you want to look at that, but it was more than what they had,
mm-hmm.
and of a finer quality material.
Yeah. Well, I think in this area also is when ladies just need to hear men are responsible for where their eyes go.
Amen.
They're responsible 100%. And ladies have to understand that men struggle with wanting to look more than ladies struggle with wanting to look at men. There's just differences in how we're wired. And so for the ladies listening in, it is just wise to be modest and to live in that way, to honor the Lord and to help Christian brothers out as we admonish Christian brothers to say, watch your eyes. Don't be letting those eyes wander, especially if you are a husband, if you're married, not especially, I mean, always, no men should be letting their eyes wander. But mm-hmm. for men, we are practicing being one woman, man, even with our eyes are for one woman, mm-hmm. and that is our wife. And men need to be trained in that also.
Yeah. And so part of that modesty is this covering of nakedness and not being inappropriate as far as what is revealed. But another part of modesty is dressing as fits the occasion. So there are different ways to dress when you're working than when you are meeting a dignitary, when you are going to church versus when you are mowing your yard. You know, you could mow your yard in church shoes. I wouldn't recommend it. But there is an understanding that there are, God is a God of times and seasons, and there are different things that are appropriate for different seasons. So when you are at home, working, lounging about, you can, you know, you could wear certain clothes, but, you know, pajama pants don't belong in the grocery store.
Right.
as common as that has become.
So this is scriptural. Mm-hmm. God painstakingly describes what the priest and the high priest should wear. And there isn't a necessarily one-to-one transfer in the New Testament. Therefore, elders should dress a certain way, or when you're coming to church, you've got to dress this way or that.
Yeah.
But there is at least a principle there that God does care about clothing.
Yeah.
And how 1 Timothy and 1 Peter talk about this for ladies, admonishing ladies, but also in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, you have this problem of men presenting themselves in a way that's unmasculine, it's feminine, and then feminine glory being diminished by ladies presenting themselves in a masculine way. Mm-hmm. And that's an issue that God sees fit to address. Also in Deuteronomy, men shall not wear women's clothing, women should not wear men's clothing. So there is a specific way that we should be presenting ourselves in the world. So this isn't androgyny. You're not to present yourself in a way that's gender neutral, but it should reflect who God created you to be.
Yeah, that's a good segue into our next principle, which is male and female. So talking about how, like you just said, God said that there are clothing that fits males and clothing that fits females. Like a man shall not wear a woman's cloak; it's an abomination. Well, that's a pretty severe condemnation of that, you know, being a transvestite. Mm-hmm. So with this principle, it's funny how in our culture we reject. We're trying to reject as much as we can gender norms, you know, as broadly speaking. I'm not saying that we should. I'm just saying that as a culture, we're dead set on trying to be unconventional. And so you'll have a T-shirt that's designed, says, gender is a social construct. Mm-hmm. But that T-shirt comes in a men's cut, and it comes in a women's cut. And those two things are different. I think it's sort of ironic that what's put on the shirt doesn't undermine the reality that men's bodies and women's bodies are different.
Yeah.
And so what does it mean to dress as a man? What does it mean to dress in a masculine way? What sort of clues from scripture do we have how that would look?
Well, I think about Jesus and John the Baptist. And Jesus, in his carpentry work, he was recognized as a teacher based on his authority and knowledge, not on his formal training. Mm-hmm. His training was vocational, was for trade. So, I mean, Jesus would have had, he would have wore blue collar clothing. I mean, he would have had an outfit that was fit for construction work. Mm-hmm. And when you think about work, there's masculine work and female work. Mm-hmm. And as much as we want to blur those lines as well, masculine trades, feminine responsibilities and work. And then with those lines of work, there are clothing that meets that particular work. There's a guy I follow on YouTube, Carl Murchowski, I think his name is. He was an electrician and he refused work clothing. And it's the kind of clothing that is made for trades. And if you're going to be out and going that kind of work, that's what you're going to wear. Mm-hmm. And there's also clothing that can be worn in masculine and feminine ways. So, you know, if you're take two people, you take a man and a woman, both wearing a T-shirt. And there's a male cut, female cut. But there's also a way of still presenting yourself in masculine and feminine ways. So a man is going to be wearing a kind of shirt one way. A woman's going to be wearing a shirt. A woman has breasts. Men don't have breasts unless they're taking hormones or something like that to grow them. So the way that the T-shirt hangs on a woman, the way a T-shirt hangs on a man, it's going to be different. And we should always try to maintain those visual distinctions the best that we can, to where we're not trying to confuse people with how we are presenting ourselves. And So I think, you know, biblically, there's not, you know, necessarily Bible verses that are saying, men, here's the kinds of clothes that you have to wear. Women, here's the kinds of clothes that you have. But just general principles we see in the Word about these distinctions that do matter. And I mean, Jesus, I mean, God tells us don't wear men's clothes and women's clothes. So at least he's recognizing that there is a difference between, when it comes to apparel, a man's outfit and a woman's outfit, and don't look. So there's going to be cultural applications of those universal commands, because a man and woman dress one way here in our world today, in this nation today, at this particular time, in this particular place, and then in another nation, you're going to dress in a different way. But in that other nation, other culture, there's still going to be masculine clothes and feminine clothes. Mm-hmm. And I think the call of that universal command is never blur those lines.
Right. Yeah, I think those are good principles to think through. There is a distinction, and it may apply differently across cultural lines. You know, you may have in their day, there's the practice of girding the loins for war, which there's a helpful graphic on Art of Manliness about how to gird your loins. On that shows their typical garb at the time and how they would pull it between their knees and tie it up in certain places so that their legs weren't bound when it came time to fight. And things they do, but generally speaking, a man as a laborer, you know, we are, a lot of our trades are physical. Some of them are more formal, but you want to have clothes that fit the occasion. So I, as a larger fellow, I don't like to show off my butt crack, but my pants don't always fit right. So I tend to wear suspenders to hold my pants up, or wear overalls, and I save people lusting after me because I wear the right kind of clothes, right? Mm-hmm. So, I love a good pair of overalls, and I wear my Hickory Stripes every day, but it's not fitting for the occasion most days because as a pastor, sometimes you make hospital visitation, sometimes you speak at Christian schools for chapels or things like that, or you're visiting people when they're sick and you don't want to come tracking in, you know, your yard dust and stuff on that. So
yeah,
with different professions, your workwear is going to look different. When I was a chef, I wore a chef coat and pants that were more grease resistant. And so that they got soiled less easily and they were more comfortable and they were heat resistant in certain parts because you're working up right next to a stove. So you have different clothes made for different occasions and different things, but they are generally different cut for men and women, and they have to do with body shapes and styles. So
yeah, well, I think that's because we live in a highly casual world at this point. If you watch any show in any time period in history beyond like 1980, you have people walking around looking nice in a suit or in some sort of casual suit, at least a sport coat, something like that, and they fit. You'll notice that they seem, if they're not custom tailored, they seem custom tailored. If you watch these old videos of like different decades, you can look back, get on YouTube and watch 1960s New York City or something. And then you have different trends that go on. You have hats in the 1920s, if earlier, and then that trend went away. Hats in public were far more common than they are today. Indoors, you know, people would always take their hats off.
Sure.
I've always wondered, what did you do with your hair? Because, I get hat hair just wearing a hat because I wear a hat a lot.
Yeah.
How did they not get hat hair? Maybe it was like the product or
pomade.
Something. Was it pomade? Yeah. It had to be pomade or something.
Dapper Dan, man.
Yeah, that's right. But those different trends that come and go, clothes that fit are important, that you're going to distinguish yourself by wearing clothes that fit.
Yeah. And people were outdoors a lot more back then, too. Mm-hmm. People, you know, they actually were in the sun. It's the thing. They wearing a hat had a practical purpose.
Yeah.
Whereas most of us are indoors most of the time, all the time now. And so unless you're in the military, you don't have your hats indoors. It's just not the mood.
Right.
So, all right. So there are differences in how men dress and women dress because of their vocations and their style of living. Another principle I want to think through is stewardship. And so particularly as a man, I want to say that the way that you dress, the way that you carry yourself, and the way that you present yourself to others is important.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Now, people will shoot back. Well, the Lord looks at the heart, not the outward appearance of the man. Yes. The same Lord gave instructions on how the priests and Levites were to dress. So he does care about the appearance of the outside, but it's not why he calls and determines people, but there is importance to how we present ourselves.
Yeah.
One, so growing up, my parents dressed us well. We had went to church. We always had church shoes, and my dad always made sure we had a watch on our wrist and a wallet in our pants.
A belt, too. Didn't you have to have a belt? Always had a belt.
Yeah. A belt matched the shoes. Mm-hmm. So there was that sense of orderliness. And as soon as we started to grow hair on our chins, you need to start shaving. You need to start learning how to take care of that, because we had a started with hideous neck beards like most people do. So gotta can't have that until you can grow that chin beard. You don't deserve one. So looking nice, smelling nice, we brushed our teeth, combed our hair, took showers, almost daily. But in college, when I started to get outside of my parents' house, you start feeling that liberty. I never had long hair. The longest my hair ever got was about to my eyebrows, and that was in college.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was in the Marines, and we just would often, at the beginning of the summer, get a high and tight or something mm-hmm. real close to it, and that would last us about, a couple of months.
Okay.
But that was the first time I started experimenting with hair a little bit and dress, and so
that was the Frohawk days.
Yeah. So, well, that was after, actually.
Okay.
So, in college started to... because I wasn't under that household anymore. I didn't have the same patterns and I got sloppy. So I was, I'd wear the same pants 3 or 4 days a week, maybe five. I wasn't so good about washing my clothes and, taking showers regularly or brushing my teeth. And so a lot of those good habits that I had grown up with getting out, I did take care of myself and didn't present myself well.
Mm-hmm.
I had a shaggy beard. Had hair down to my eyebrows. I wore a dirty old army coat every day and stinky pants. So that I didn't carry myself well. And during that time, I was starting to work with some church plants, and it was, they were very, very good folks. And one of them, a good mentor of mine, Greg Douglas, he brought me aside one day and said, "Look, you get up on stage and you represent our church. And I want to make sure that you are putting your best foot forward."
Mm-hmm.
You tend to wear shirts that are too big and they're not always clean. And so here's $50. Go to Kohl's, buy some clothes.
And 15 years ago, or however long it was, at Kohl's, $50 went a long way.
Yeah. So, but I took the hint, which was I need to pay more attention to my appearance. And that was a very... let a righteous man strike me. It's above mm-hmm. my head.
Yeah.
So that was a very gentle correction that he brought. And I started to think, well, I need to start aligning more so that I can fit my occasion, so I could dress to fit the occasion. So I went and I got some better clothes, nothing too fancy or opulent, but things that matched or things that had, that looked decent. I started wearing collared shirts. Again, like I did in school and all that to say, I wasn't dressing to fit the occasion and it was not good for me and it wasn't putting my best foot forward. Mm-hmm. They talked about with the art of manliness, there was a really helpful article and video on that website about ways to dress for larger men.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought up in that, it was very helpful for me to understand this frame, is that larger folks, fat guys, they are not viewed as generally being cleanly or organized or disciplined, right? And so that's just the shape of your body brings that to mind from people. And so in order to dispel that notion, you have to dress nice. You have to groom nice. And you have to take more preparation to present yourself than a normal person does, just to get the same amount of respect or close to that of a regular person in not fine clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So there are just ways that you have to understand how people think.
Yeah.
And so how you dress can even affect opportunities that you get or don't get. So
right.
You get a job interview. You go to interview and you are wearing clothes that are way too big or too little and not clean. Well, that person looking at you is going to think, well, if I hire this person, he doesn't even take care of himself. How's he going to take care of the responsibilities that I'm going to sit in front of him?
Yeah.
Or I can't send him to represent me looking like that to a client. And so you can actually lose opportunities to provide for your family simply by how you dress. Now, don't be that sort of person that dresses up for an interview and never dresses up again. You want to be the sort of person that consistently appears fit for the occasion.
Yeah.
You're shaved right. You've got your hair, style messy, like you just rolled out of bed. Polish your shoes. Get the scuffs off your shoes. You want to be able to represent not only the business and your family, but also God. So mm-hmm. when you go out evangelizing people and you smell like a college locker room, they don't want to sit and listen to somebody that smells like a foot.
Yeah.
Talk to him about Jesus.
So it's true.
So you want to, again, the stewardship, you want to be able to provide for your family. So you get a good job and you keep it by taking care of how you look. There are all sorts of other disciplines to go with that personally, but at least go there looking good, smelling good, feeling good.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, all that is practice for raising up our children. Mm-hmm. The way we present ourselves, the way we live our lives, it's a cultural thing that builds in your home that is caught by children, and we want to train them up in that. Mm-hmm. I think we're just kind of blurring a couple of categories we talked about, but going back to a Sunday morning versus a typical weekend. Saturdays, generally, people are working outside, taking care of your house, doing stuff on the inside, projects you may have. You may have some sporting events that you go to. Right now, we have football, and we go on football to football games. We dress once a week right now. We go there, and we're dressed a certain way. On Sunday mornings, Sunday is, it's turned into this very casual living room kind of thing for most churches. But what is a Sunday morning for the people of God? It's a different day than other days of the week that we're doing something very, very specific. And culturally speaking, it's as you wouldn't go to a job interview wearing the same clothes you would at a football practice or game. You don't come on a Sunday morning wearing the same things that you do working at your house on a Saturday. And, this episode didn't say, you got to wear a sport coat and all this kind of stuff. But if you're going to err one way or the other, err presenting yourself in a way that communicates, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to worship God, glorify God, and edify the saints. Mm-hmm. And I want to present myself when I worship God and edify the saints in a way that's showing I know that this is something unique that compared to any other thing I'm doing this week. And therefore, for me, the conclusions that I've come to is that Jesus didn't wear the exact clothes of the Levites. He wasn't wearing the same things that the Pharisees were wearing. And he's the chief shepherd of the church. How did he present himself? Well, he presented himself in the right way, in the perfect way, in every occasion, in all times. For me, that means on Sundays, like right now, I'm wearing a t-shirt, jeans, and a hat with boots. I would never wear this to preach in, ever. So when I come to preach on Sunday mornings, I'm not. Sometimes I wear a sport coat, and during the fall and wintertime, I'm wearing a sport coat more than I am in the summertime. But I'm always wearing a collared shirt, and that's just kind of the standard for me. And it does say, at least in the way I live my life throughout the week, I'm dressing a little bit different on Sunday morning because I'm going to do something different on the Lord's Day than I am on other days of the week.
Well, thinking about it, as a culture, when you go out on a date, you generally dress up. When you go to a wedding, you generally dress up. And so there are, even just in day-to-day occasions, times when you change how you dress. And there are people who say, well, God's omnipresent. So when I'm at home or when I come to church, it's the same. Well, God's omnipresent when you're naked in the shower. That doesn't mean that you don't put clothes on, okay? Mm-hmm. So you understand that just in the other events through your week, you already are determining how you dress for work. Some businesses have standards as to how people are to dress, before everybody started working from home and not wearing pants. But you dress one way for work. You dress another way for going out to eat with your wife. You dress one way for going to a wedding. If you're not in the wedding party, you're not wearing a tuxedo, but you're still dressed nice because you want to show honor and respect because you've been invited to, a wedding, feast, and you don't want to come sloppily dressed. Now, Jesus, when he was telling the parable of the wedding feast and how they brought in the folks from the highways and the hedges, they were brought in, but the person wasn't wearing appropriate attire. And so what happened to the person that wasn't wearing wedding clothes? He was thrown out. Mm-hmm. So to say that God doesn't care about how a person is dressed, well, that's not always true.
Yeah.
It was from that parable. That person was dressed inappropriately for that occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are greater spiritual realities that were at work in that, but that at least goes to show that there is a cultural understanding. There are times to wear nicer clothes, times to wear work clothes, times to wear lounging clothes.
And if you're not presenting yourself to a particular occasion in the way you need to, it's obvious to everyone.
Yeah. You stick out as horrible.
Yeah, you do. Because if you go out dressed up to a football game with your sport coat on and you're out there in the mud, you stand out to everybody that's there. It also tells you what you think about what you're doing. What do you think this is? And if you're showing up, it was popular when I was in college to wear sweatpants to everything. You know, you go to classroom wearing sweatpants. And it communicated what I thought I was doing. I'm just here just to be comfortable and try to get through the class is all I'm trying to do. And I think it would have fared far better for me if I would have actually dressed somewhat nice, gone to the classroom, and would have set my mind at a more appropriate place than just getting up, rolling out of bed, and trying to get to that 8 o'clock class on time.
We actually practice this with our kids and have for the last 2 years, where we noticed that when our kids would roll out of bed for homeschool, and there wasn't a visual transition for them of when school began and when it ended, that it seemed like it took forever. The day you just kind of roll in together. So there was no distinction between, you know, play and work and home and all that. Because when you're doing homeschool, it really can feel like it all rolls together and your days are really long. So also we would take, you know, field trips and go places where we'd take pictures. And I thought, well, it'd be nice if in all our pictures, our kids look nice so that they don't feel embarrassed. Well, you know, like we did back in the 80s and 90s, sometimes when we would, you know, go to a theme park or something, and we'd look like ragamuffins muffins running around. But it'd be nice for our kids to, one, look good in pictures, but two, to have that mental shift in their mind, like, I'm dressing to do work, and then when I'm done with work, they have, you know, kind of sort of lounging clothes that they can put on there. And I noticed just in that physical act of having, you know, school clothes and play clothes, and distinguishing between the two, it helped them be more productive, but also it just beautified our home by having our kids.
That's cool.
Look nice.
Yeah, that's good. It's a mental thing. It's a frame of mind, what we're doing and what we're wearing. And I think another example, easy example of how this is demonstrated is on Sunday mornings, you get ready, you go to worship. When you get home, what's the first thing everybody does when you get home? You change into comfortable clothes.
Yeah.
And now you're in rest mode. Mm-hmm. You worship, rest, and it's almost immediate.
Yeah.
I think Joey Hawkins one time posted a video of him, and he was wearing like a collared shirt still, but he had basketball shorts on and flip-flops, and he was grilling, and he's like post-Sunday service clothing on, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that. It was perfect post, by the way. And Joey's moving back, which is pretty cool.
So,
yeah, for Southern Illinois, that's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, what else we got?
All right, so we covered, you know, stewardship, those opportunities, and dressing for the occasion. Oh, one other thing on stewardship. Let's talk about quality.
Yeah, quality over quantity.
So talk about that some.
Okay, well, buy once, cry once when it comes to clothing. When your kids are little, you can get them looking nice by hand-me-down stuff. And at Cape Girardeau, there's the, what's the store down
once
there?
Once Upon a Child.
Yeah, Once Upon a Child is phenomenal. You can get Air Jordans for like $14. It's pretty cool. You can get nice clothing down there, jeans.
Children's pantry here at the church.
Got a children's pantry at the church, and getting clothing that fits, because children are growing. As you grow up, men, when you get to 18, 22, something like that, can afford to put money back and buy quality over quantity. We live in a day now that you can actually get quality over quantity for fairly cheap. You can get on eBay. I can't tell you how many shirts I've got over the years on eBay that are Woolrich brand, full wool. I'm a wool guy. Pendleton, Woolrich, Made in America. And these shirts, if you were to go buy them a new one, Made in America, full wool right now, you'd pay $300 to $500 for a shirt like this. On eBay, you can get them for $35. And they're, I mean, I personally, it's like they give me the fizz kind of thing. Jeans, jeans over the years. I like Origin jeans. I usually buy one good pair of jeans a year, get them on a Black Friday sale. I find quality over quantity. And boots, it's a really good way when you're thinking about work boots. If you go out and get a cheap pair of work boots for all the blue collar guys, you know that a cheap pair of boots will fall apart. Mm-hmm. But especially if you're working in a factory or something like that, you know that if you spend $200 to $300 on a pair of boots, well, they're going to last longer, and they've got a better feel. You can get them resold. I've had a pair of Red Wings that I've had for 8 or 9 years. I've got them resold a couple years ago at Adam's Shoe Store. And rather than having a fast fashion full of, you know, cheap clothes that you got at Old Navy, get some functional clothing that you'll be able to wear for a long period of time that fits. And styles come in and out, but clothes that fit are always going to look good. The 90s trash bag look is in right now for women and men. Getting, you know, big baggy JNCO jeans is, for some reason, by all the hip people who look totally retarded, they like getting these big, huge, baggy clothing. It looks a little bit better on women than it does men, getting some more wide leg mm-hmm. jeans. But the clothing that you pick, if it fits, you're going to be able to wear that, especially for guys. You'll be able to wear a pair of jeans, flannels, a nice fitting suit. Even when styles change, you'll still look nice.
Yeah.
And if you look at, Jordan and I were watching Cheers, the TV show Cheers. And in the early years of Cheers, it was before those big baggy 90s shirts came out. They just had fitting clothes. We thought, wow, they all kind of look like you could pull them out of 1982 or 1984 into 2024. And they actually would look nice. They wouldn't stand out.
Yeah.
And it's because the clothes fit. There's still age to them where you could see it was from a different era. But it was still, they still look nice. Sure. And then as the show goes on, the big baggier clothes came in, which looked silly. But buy once, cry once. When it comes to clothing, quality is always going to be better than quantity. And if you're getting Made in America, if you're getting an old shirt off eBay that still fits nice, or even Poshmark, sorry to throw out my man card here, but I bought some stuff on Poshmark because it's cheap. Hmm. You can get things that will last another 30 years. I've got a shirt from the 60s that I still wear. It's a Pendleton shirt, Made in America, made in Pendleton, Oregon, and I still wear it. And so you can that's my whole thing. But get quality, and it's going to last you rather than just buying a bunch of junk.
Yeah, I think that's good to know. That's, you know, being a young man and not making a lot of money, it's easy to kind of think, well, that's a standard I'm not never be able to hit. But you'd be surprised you can build up a small wardrobe that's interchangeable. You don't need, you know, hundreds of shirts. You don't need 30 shirts. You need probably, you know, 5 or 6 good collared shirts. And, you know, or unless you wash them every other day, you can have 2 or 3, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But have good quality shirts and undershirts and to protect those clothes, make them last longer.
And know your sizes. If you know I'm a 38 regular, so if I'm at a thrift store, Jordan and I love going to thrift stores, I'll go through the sport coat section, and you can get nice clothing at a thrift store if you know your sizes. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the fit. If you can get something that fits, it's going to look good. Mm-hmm. If you get something that's too baggy or too small, you're going to look like fat guy in a little coat, you know, Tommy Boy, mm-hmm. or you're going to look like Charlie Kirk used to look before Don Jr. said, Charlie, you got to get a jacket that fits you.
Yeah.
Because he was embarrassing to look at.
Sure.
And it's just, if you know your sizes, then wear clothing that fits you and you're going to look nice.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, get you a good black belt and a good brown belt, good brown pair of shoes, good black pair of shoes, and some tennis shoes to mow the lawn in, and, you know, a good pair of work.
If you're over 30, you got to get your New Balance to mow in. Brandon's already got those.
Yeah. Well, Terry gave me some Monarchs, Nike Air Monarchs, but their toe box is a little small. It hits my feet every time I wear.
You know you're an old soul if you're walking around in Nunbush, so not to out you here.
Well, yeah. This is my third pair of the same Cameron Oxford brown from Nunbush. And I tell you what, it's because I got big toes, and all the other brands of shoes pinch my toes all together and make me feel like I'm wearing my Sunday morning shoes when I was a kid all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So these ones have a nice toe box. They're comfortable to wear, and this is my third pair of them. I love them.
Yeah.
But I do look, I am an old soul and I dress like an old man.
Yeah.
So I don't mind it, but hey, it fits the occasion.
Yeah.
Pastoral work is sort of an old man's work.
Yeah.
So
it is.
All right. So another thing to think of is the aesthetics and symbolic reverence. You know, that we talked about dressing for Sunday morning and the specific occasion. Well, you see with sort of, I don't know if you've ever seen one of these modern fashion shows. I don't even know what, you know, like Balenciaga and stuff like that. Well, they come out and like they're wearing pants that look like shirts and like shirts that look like pants.
Stupidest stuff ever.
Wearing like a coat rack on their head and it just stupid nonsense. But and you're thinking, why in the world are they doing that? Why are they dressing like they're in a one of those old medieval paintings? And it's because they are trying to undermine the natural order. It's like why in the world would you dress worse than a clown?
Same problem with modern art,
right,
or architecture.
Right. It's just ugly. Mm-hmm. But the ugliness is the point.
Mm-hmm.
It's to try to circumvent the natural world.
Yeah.
And to try to gender bend and try to, you know, have, is it Harry Styles wearing dresses with his chest hair hanging out and everything? It's stupid.
Were the LGB mafia, that whole crowd, why is it the feminists and the LGBT crowd are so ugly? They're so ugly because it's like they try to present themselves in the most ugly way they possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, like shaving half their head and leaving the other half hanging down, colored, you know, five or six different colors. And it's just silly stuff. But the symbolism behind their dress stuff is pretty much just shaking a fist at God.
That's just rebellion.
God made two genders. Well, we don't want genders to be recognizable. So we're going to dress in a way that you can't tell even that it's a person. It looks like a floating coat rack or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that warning in public worship is also there because the reason men are not allowed to wear hats in church is because we're not allowed to cover our heads.
Right.
And when that, there's so many churches that are so casual where people just go in, they're just wearing hats, like dudes just wearing hats. Mm-hmm. And women presenting themselves in masculine ways. And that's categorically forbidden.
Yeah.
And that rebellion is seen not just on Sundays by men who wear hats or women who present themselves in masculine ways, but in our world where they literally want to diminish the image of God and destroy and deface the image of God with their clothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the transsexual that's trying to destroy and recreate his own body, but people do this in fashion as well. We don't want there to be male clothes. We don't want there to be female clothes. We don't want clothes to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
We want to recreate what it means to even clothe our bodies.
Right.
So dishonor.
Yeah. Yep. And I think it's sort of like you imagine the Overton window and they're just trying to push the other side of it so far to bring things that are silly to make them regularly acceptable to society. And so the reason that they dress in such ways that they would never dress in you know, just regular cities, they get laughed out of town.
Yeah.
But they have these shows to try to put all their weight on that side of the Overton window to make, well, what used to be silly, now it's kind of feasible as long as it's not as silly as what is on the other side of the window. So,
well, in the Christian community, if we're following these principles that are laid out of respect, honor, dignity, class, I mean, a man is going to look like a man. He's going to be dressed for the occasion. He's going to have clothing that fits those particular occasions that he enjoys. If a man doesn't fish, well, he's not going to have clothing to go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't play sports, he's not going to have clothing that can do that. But for whatever he has or whatever he does, he's going to be able to present himself in that way. So a church should be filled with men and women who have clothing that fits. They're well-kept. They're clean. They're orderly. What's going on in the inside, the peace that passes all understanding that they're experiencing on the inside, is reflective also in the way they want to obey God and how they dress. So they're not going to be immodest. So a lady is going to look feminine. She's going to, you know, dresses. I think people talk about how they want women to wear dresses all the time. It is beautiful when a woman wears a dress or she presents her hair in a way that is feminine. And hair God gave women hair for their glory. And there's glory there when a woman keeps her hair looking beautiful and feminine. And the ladies then are going to be have clothing that fits their body. It's going to be clear that they're women And there's going to be a beauty there. That internal beauty is going to come out externally, not flamboyantly, but it will be there. And for the man, it's not going to come out flamboyantly where the clothing is drawing unnecessary attention to them. But what you can expect in a healthy church is men that look like men, women that look like women, and there's just class and dignity that's observable.
Let's talk about children.
Okay.
So an example from my family this last week, Asif has inherited my biology, which means his pants will never stay up. He's got a perpetual crack disorder. And that's, you know, that's just how it is. We just don't have hips, and that's okay. We're just like cans, you know. So this week I went out and I bought him some bigger pants that can slide up over and be held up by suspenders. And I got him a pair of suspenders that can hook onto his belt, you know, and he wears it under his clothes. He's not going to look like Steve Urkel all the time. I always wear suspenders generally under my clothes or under different layers or over different layers, but they're generally not seen. But I just don't have any hips, and neither does he, you know. So a way to protect his modesty and to protect him from ridicule, because kids can be mean. I want kids, you know, telling him he's got the crack that smiles back.
Crack kills.
Yeah, that's right. You know, that puts some spackling on that crack. I don't want him to be a constant subject of ridicule. And so, as a father, we'll buy him some pants and give him his first pair of suspenders and make sure he wears a belt so that he's not made fun of for his backside. And same thing with our girls. You know, we want to make sure that when they go out in public that their hair's brushed. That it's, you know, not just looking like they roll out of bed with rat's nests all through it. Our kids shower regularly, and that they smell clean and present themselves in a way that doesn't draw the ridicule of other kids or even, you know, adults. That is a way that you're as a father, you're charged to protect your kids and
right.
to teach them the way, teach them how to take care of themselves, to present themselves in public and don't let them dress themselves. Okay. Now, you know, as a 90s kid, that didn't always work. You know, there are lots of these days, you go to Walmart and it's like half the kids' clothes have got some kind of character face on it, some kind of Disney character or whatever. And there are times and places for that. We let our kids, you know, pick their pajamas because they're at home, you know.
Right.
They get to express themselves and, you know, socks and things like that, things that nobody sees. But I pick out my kids' clothes. My wife picks out my kids' clothes, too. We go to the consignment shop and pick them out together. Because your kids don't know how to dress themselves. They don't know principles of clashing, you know, patterns. So they'll
or sizes or
sizes. They'll wear, you know, polka dot pants and striped shirts, and they don't know. They don't care. They like the way it looks. But you want to protect them. You
right.
Make sure that people aren't thinking the wrong things about them. And so you, for the first part of their life, until they're able to learn and grasp those principles, dress your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You help them set up their clothes, or better yet, don't give them, you know, drawers and drawers full of silly clothes. Give them some good interchangeable clothes that they can put whatever they pick would look good.
Mm-hmm.
They have their separate play clothes they can put on after school or after church, and that's fine. But have their going out clothes and their staying home clothes fit the occasion. So don't follow the liberal mindset. Oh, well, the kids are going to show us who they are, and they're going to, you know, pick out everything. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, that's good. Well, let's wrap it up. I got to get going, and I think this is a lot of good content for people to think through.
Yeah.
And if there's anything we missed, let us know.
All right.
Yep.